From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, David Crosby is the subject of a new documentary that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. It's produced by Cameron Crowe, whose interviews with a singer-songwriter force Crosby to get honest about a whole lot of stuff.
Even though I don't want to admit I care what people think, it matters. It matters how I look at myself. And doing this has made it easier for me to look at myself.
And the animated short film Bow has an Academy Award nomination. We'll revisit my interview with its director, Domi Shee. All that after this short break.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the soulfully authentic A Star is Born, starring Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott in their Academy Award-nominated performances for consideration in all categories.
And by Marvel Studios' Black Panther, now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Costume and Production Design, Score, Original Song, All the Stars, performed by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, and Best Motion Picture.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn.
When you see the Southern Cross for the first time.
That's Southern Cross, one of my favorite recordings by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And if you listen to the words closely, it's one of the great breakup songs. And in a way, it mirrors a lot of what David Crosby has gone through in his personal and professional life. Crosby is best known for making music with Graham Nash, Stephen Stills, and Neil Young. And Crosby has torched his relationships with all of those colleagues and many more. Crosby's life, with all of its ups and downs, including a stint in prison, is the subject of the new documentary, David Crosby, Remember My Name. The movie premiered last week at the Sundance Film Festival. The documentary is produced by Cameron Crowe. He's a veteran rock music journalist and the filmmaker behind movies like Almost Famous and Jerry Maguire. The film's director is A.J. Eaton. We invited Crosby, Crowe, and Eaton to The Frame's condo in Park City, Utah last week as the film was premiering at Sundance. And I began by asking David Crosby if he was initially game to lay bare to so much.
No. They took it a lot further than I would have been comfortable with initially. They gave me nowhere to room, nowhere to hide. There wasn't any, look, they're both really good at it. And they both wanted the same thing I did, which was to be as truthful as we could possibly manage. And so they really did not give me any place to hide at all. They weren't merciless, but they were determined, because he's known me since he was 17. He knows everything that's happened. We've talked a lot. He's my friend. So there really wasn't anywhere to hide. They did pull the covers on it pretty completely, and it wasn't a comfortable experience, but I think in the long run, if you step back from it, if I can step back from it and not look at it as me, as they're trying to show you a person.
Cameron, I want to ask you about your journalistic relationship with David. There's a point in the film where you pull out a tape that you have saved for many years. I think it's one of the first interviews that you did with David. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with David and why you had some questions that you still had left to ask?
Yeah. Well, John, I ran into them, AJ and David, as they were just starting to talk to people about doing a documentary. And we actually ran into each other by accident in J.J. Abrams' office. And they told me they were starting this little journey. And my feeling was, just looking at David, he's ready to talk. He's ready to go there. So I said to these guys, I'm doing other stuff, but just let me interview him, because I saw that look in his eyes. And that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to like give AJ interviews for his documentary. And I knew David from when I was 17. He was one of the first interviews I ever did. I was so grateful that he made the time to do it, because he didn't do interviews in the day. He kind of, you know, shined a little grace upon a kid journalist, right? So I had like so many questions for him. And I got through every one of them. He spent hours with me. I was 17. And these were the greatest answers ever. Geeked out with our friend Joel Bernstein for days afterwards. Anyway, he's never been less than that honest ever since. So I thought, you know, I'll come in, I'll do some interviews with these guys, And then the waters got so deep and the feelings got so rich. And then AJ had a piece that he had put together of just Crosby talking about how listening to classical musicians as a kid taught him how the elbows work together and everybody works together as a community of musicians, and how this gave him the feeling of wanting to be in a band and create music like this. And I was like, David, you know, AJ's, he's got the man, it's working. So I became more and more involved with Glee, working with this amazing time in David's life where he wanted to tell us these stories, because you can't get them out of him if he doesn't want to tell them. And he's always honest, but he's even more honest today, I think.
AJ, any honest documentary filmmaker will say that the movie that they started off making is not the movie they ended up making. That they might have had a preconceived idea of what they were going to do, and it turned out to be something different. And there are always a lot of surprises along the way. If you were to say to yourself what you thought you were going to make and what you ended up making, how would you say they're the most different, and what surprised you along the journey that changed the shape of the film the most?
I think about 75% of what I initially started off, and I know this sounds odd, at the movie ended up 75% of what I wanted to be. But of course, I'm more than happy to say that my expectations were defied. I'm so happy with the way that it turned out, because we made a lot of very great discoveries in this process of sculpting the narrative. There were things that really attracted me to the story that I found they're not important as other things. And I was willing and able to discover that we created a portrait of a man, and to be able to have the freedom to remove some of those details of his life to expose the truth. And it was really great.
David, I want to ask you about that idea, because before we came up to Park City, we were talking with Kim Yatani, who's the director of programming at the festival. And she said, if you step back and start looking at films here, documentaries and narratives, so many of them are about exposing truths. And it could be truth about something that's going on in immigration. It could be truth about somebody's own feeling about themselves. If you were to step back and look at this movie and the truths that it reveals about you, and maybe the truths that you learned about yourself in making it, what would you say those truths are?
That's a really tough one, man. The overriding concern is, what are you going to do with your life, right? And the process that you go through in looking at your life with people who are certainly not out to get you, but they are not going to cut you any slack. You wind up, catharsis is one word for it, but there's more to it than that. You do wind up looking at your life, and you do wind up looking at how you're living it. It's that deep, and nothing less. You wind up having to consider what kind of person you want to be. Which is one of those essential questions, you know, right down at the bottom. And nothing less. I think the process is wonderful. I wish everybody could go through it. It's not comfy, but it's educational as hell.
Coming up, veteran singer-songwriter David Crosby opens up more about his fractured relationships with past collaborators like Neil Young.
One morning, I woke up and I knew you were gone. A new day, a new way, and new eyes.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the soulfully authentic A Star Is Born, starring Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott in their Academy Award-nominated performances. Now nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay. Kenneth Turan of the Los Angeles Times calls it passionate, emotional, and fearless. And AFI calls the film a stellar achievement in its own universe, for consideration in all categories.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Marvel Studios, presenting Black Panther. The LA Times raves Black Panther is the cinematic event of the year. Vanity Fair calls it a political and social triumph. USA Today acclaims Black Panther is a rousing cultural movement. and now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Costume and Production Design, Score, Original Song, All the Stars, performed by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, and Best Motion Picture.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm your host, John Horn. And now let's get back to the documentary, David Crosby, Remember My Name. We're talking with the singer, the film's director, A.J. Eaton, and its producer, Cameron Crowe. The film was bought at Sundance by Sony Pictures Classics. A release date has yet to be announced. In watching the documentary, at times it felt as if you were listening in on someone else's therapy session. So I asked Crosby if that's what it felt like for him.
Yeah, but it's better than therapy because the guys I was talking to cared. It's different. Therapist doesn't care. He's got a playbook. These guys are my friends. They were doing their job, which means they cut me no slack at all. But they were also my friends.
But to make the film as honest as you want to make it, even if you're friends and even if you have great respect for David, it means you have to go to some places that are going to be uncomfortable. And it could be about busted relationships. It could be about something as painful to watch, and I think you'll agree, as you and Stephen and Graham singing Silent Night on some TV thing.
Yeah, it's all painful. Point was, are we going to duck that stuff and just put a ribbon on it and say, gee, David Crosby was so peachy keen? No. There's a story to be told, and we're not in it to put fluff out there. We did talk about some painful stuff, and yeah, that was a painful moment. They had our monitor mixes switched. Stills was hearing my monitor, and I was hearing his, so he couldn't get any pitch at all. So he was like wildly out of tune. It wasn't really his fault. It was a screw-up by the monitor mixer there. But it sounded like we felt.
It's a vivid moment in the film. I don't think David was sure we were going to use it or not.
I told him not to. They totally ignored me on everything like that. There's several places I said, do not do that.
I never
any circumstances.
Heard that. So I was just so happy to have that in the film because it's so freaking real. But here, I just want to say, like, when we showed the film for the first time, there was such a real moment because David had not seen the movie. None of us had seen the movie with a big audience. And instead of somebody getting up there in a glib way saying, I'm glad you enjoyed my mea culpa film or something, he was still in shock. He was still in shock as he stood up there in front of the audience. And the audience got to see him processing what they'd just seen and were processing. And it was a remarkable moment to be like 7 feet away as you kind of realized that the audience was wrapping its arms around you. They were with you. And as you started to realize that and come into your answers, that to me, that was the greatest experience of the whole process. So real.
AJ and Cameron, there are certain people who are central to the story, Joni Mitchell, Graham Nash. Did you try to talk to them? Did they not want to talk? How did you go about that?
We just made a conscientious decision that we wanted Crosby to be the sole narrator of his story. And we decided that we didn't want to do a big cavalcade of, oh, this person, oh, Crosby was this and that. We didn't want to do a bunch of talking heads. And so when we first put the first assembly together, we realized that those people and the portrait that Crosby paints with them in the movie, I didn't need that.
A lot of the people that he's worked with and his collaborators are still in our kind of circle of people that we know and work with. And many of them have reached out to us throughout and just said, just be honest. Say hi to David. Good luck.
We're talking with David Crosby, director A.J. Eaton, and producer Cameron Crowe about the documentary David Crosby, Remember My Name. There are so many fractured relationships at the center of this story.
Yeah.
And there are fractured relationships that you had a large role in fracturing.
Yes.
You are making a movie where you're not only talking about those fractures, but you're hearing from the people whose relationships have been blown. So when you're watching the movie yourself and hearing what your former friends are saying about you, what is that like?
It's good. It's educational as hell. I don't think there's anything there I didn't know already, wasn't aware of already. But, you know, anytime you're confronted with the truth, the The real question is, did you learn anything from it? The information on who those guys are and what they think has been there long before this documentary. I knew them for 40 years. I know who they are and I know what they're thinking. The way we consider it in the documentary, I think, is the way we treated it, I thought was as good as we could. You know, we didn't slag anybody. We didn't blame anybody else. I'm more than willing to take blame for anything that happened in that group. I'll take more blame than anybody. But we all did horrible stuff to each other.
We as an audience watching this movie learn a lot about you, not just about your music, but about your life and about your health, about the people who are important to you. When you watch the movie, do you learn something about yourself that maybe you didn't quite recognize?
I learned how badly I want to be a decent human being and have that rep. Because I've been other than a decent human being, and it's not fun. I was a junkie. It doesn't get any lower than that. So I learned that it matters to me tremendously. Even though I don't want to admit I care what people think, it matters. It matters how I look at myself. And doing this has made it easier for me to look at myself.
Has it changed what you're going to do? Because at the end of the film, I think Cameron asked about, why don't you just show up at Neil Young's house and say, I'm sorry. And part of me, and I think anybody who's watching the movie, is like, yeah, show up at his house, say you're sorry.
I'm already doing what I'm going to be doing. I'm making music the best I can, as fast as I can, and I apologize to Neil and more to Daryl, who was the person I insulted, publicly as you can do it. I mean, it doesn't get more public than what's his name on the radio show?
The Howard Stern Show.
I had Neil Young in here 2-3 months ago, and he was distressed because you had said something about Daryl Hannah on social media. You know, Neil left his wife and started dating Daryl Hannah, and you were very critical of Daryl Hannah, you said.
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you the truth about that. I shouldn't have done it, and here's the real reason why. I'm a screw-up. I have screwed up massively. Daryl Hannah never wound up in a Texas prison.
Right.
You know, I'm screwed up way worse than that girl. Where do I get off criticizing her? Where do I get off slagging her? She's making Neil happy.
Right.
You know, and I love Neil, and I want him happy.
Do you think
let me do this. Sure. It's the truth. Yeah. I apologize, Daryl. If you're out there, I had no right. I have nowhere to stand to look down on you and criticize you. I apologize. I should not have done that. It was completely out of line.
You know, you said you can't just show up on his front porch.
I can't do that. A, I don't know where he lives now. He lost his ranch in the divorce. So I, the only place I know where he lived isn't there anymore.
You have such an interesting look on your face when you're asked that question in the film. I've always wanted to ask you since that moment, what are you thinking when you go, because I don't know where his doorstep is? And you're just looking at me like, I'm not sure.
Like, I think you know.
Interesting.
David, I'm going to ask you this last question. People who know you, know your music, maybe know something about your life. If they go into this movie and are changed by seeing it and how they see you and how they understand you, how do you hope people might be changed and their understanding of you might be changed?
I would hope that they would think that I wasn't just a rambunctious asshole. You know, I would hope that they thought could see that there was a thought process behind most of what I did. Not all, but most. And I think that I'm a good lesson in the sense that I'm a very imperfect being. It's blatantly obvious. I'm also trying pretty hard to be a decent guy. And I think if people, you know, look at the guy that they're looking at in the movie, they're going to say, you know, this is a mixed bag. And I shouldn't judge people on one color. You know, people are not a single entity uniformly. They have all kinds of stuff in them. And I think when I look at my friends or my family or my wife or my child, that I got to understand there's like good and bad and mistakes and courage and stupidity and all that stuff's in there. And it's not one picture. It's not one uniform person. And none of us are. You aren't. She isn't. He isn't. And that's a good lesson to learn. That's a good lesson. Take a longer look. Walk a mile in their shoes. do something, read a book, try to gain more understanding of a human before you judge him. Because I have been judged shallowly and badly by tons of people. Not that that harms me, but you know, they didn't understand who the hell I was. And I think this film, because they tried as hard as they did to keep it honest, if you give a shit about who I am, you will know. You can watch this film, and you will get a very honest picture of a human being. Pretty much soup to nuts, the whole meal.
That was David Crosby, director A.J. Eaton, and producer Cameron Crowe, recorded at the Sundance Film Festival after the premiere of their documentary, David Crosby, Remember My Name. Coming up, Pixar's first female director of an animated short, now nominated for an Oscar, explains how she brought a steam dumpling to life.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Fox Searchlight Pictures, presenting The Favorite, now nominated for 10 Academy Awards, including Best Director Yorgos Lanthimos, Best Actress Olivia Colman, Best Supporting Actresses Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, Best Original Screenplay, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, Best Cinematography, and Best Picture of the Year. For your consideration.
When an earthquake hits, you need to drop, cover, and hold on.
Definitely there will be the perception that the ground is literally waving in front of you.
But what do you do after the shaking stops? When the power is out, the roads are blocked. I'm Jacob Margolis, host of KPCC's new podcast, The Big One, your survival guide. I've got plenty of answers for you. Listen in Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. The Pixar short Bao, which played before The Incredibles 2 movie last summer, is up for an Oscar this year for Best Animated Short Film, and The Incredibles sequel was also nominated in the Animated Feature category. Bao was written and directed by Domi Shi. She's the first woman ever to direct a Pixar short. The movie tells the story of an older Chinese-Canadian woman who's adjusting to her newly empty nest. She gets a second chance at parenthood when one of her homemade dumplings suddenly springs to life as a little dumpling baby boy. Domi Shi is a storyboard artist at Pixar. She'd worked on Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur before she got the idea for Bao back in 2014. When I reached her at Pixar recently, she explained her inspiration.
I think I was sitting late in my office one night and I was probably really hungry. I was just brainstorming ideas for a short, and this image just popped into my head of this old Chinese mom nuzzling this baby dumpling boy to death, and I had to just draw it down. As I was drawing more and more drawings of this dumpling character and this mom character, this story kind of emerged. I've always loved classic fairy tales like The Gingerbread Man, and I wanted to like do a Chinese version of that with Bao, like with a little steam bun instead of like a little cookie. And I always loved how fairy tales play with really like light and dark elements as well. But also I was inspired by my own life. You know, I was an only child, or I am still an only child, growing up to my two very overprotective Chinese parents. And I felt like ever since I was little, they've always treated me like that precious little dumpling, like making sure I'm safe, that I never wandered away too far. And even though I'm kind of like the dumpling in the situation, I was really interested in exploring this relationship from the parents' point of view, because I wanted to learn more about why my mom was always so overprotective of me growing up. Like, I was always so frustrated. Like, oh, like, I just want to be free. Just let me be free, woman. And I think, like, using this short was a really good way for me to empathize with her more, empathize with my parents.
What was it like to show your parents the film? How'd they react?
My dad hasn't seen it yet, but my mom has. I took her to the premiere, and she really liked it. She, I asked her, like, did you cry? And she said, oh, I was emotional on the inside, and I'm proud of you. And I was like, oh, okay. So I think she liked it, but she's, I think she's, like, more proud of me, just, like, because I guess, like, for me, the short is kind of, like, my creation and my child, and for her, I am her work, like her short. So she was really emotional and happy when everyone came up to us and started congratulating us on the short.
I want to ask you about the look of the film, where you came mm-hmm. up with its design. Do you reference any other films? And what were the essential conversations that you had about how this film was going to appear?
Really early on, I talked with my production designer, Rona Liu, and we established like the look and the style that we wanted for the short. We always knew that we wanted it to feel really cute and round. Like we almost wanted the whole world to feel like a round dumpling-esque world. We love the look of miniatures. Like there's these amazing miniature sets that people build and they would just take pictures of and show online that had like all of these amazing little details of a kitchen or like of a living room, but it's just like shrunk down. And there's just something super appealing that we loved about the look of miniatures. Like the textures on clothing are a little bit bigger. Details on furniture and objects are a little bit more simplified, but it all just, it still feels very like appealing and real, but there's just a stylization to it that we really loved. And so we wanted the whole world to feel really cute and round. And me and Rona are also huge fans of Studio Ghibli. My neighbors, the Yamadas, was a huge influence for us. That's a film by the director Isao Takahata. He's like the second half of Studio Ghibli. Like the other half is Hayao Miyazaki. And Takahata's film, My Neighbors, the Yamadas, was just so great in depicting this average Japanese family in such a charming and appealing and sentimental way. Design of the characters in the movie are very stylized. They have very big, round, squishy heads and tiny limbed bodies. But the observation to life and those like little details, like those little slice of life details in the movie are so amazing. Like this family having dinner around the table or going to work or going to school and the little trials and tribulations of life, like, you know, accidentally leaving your laundry drying outside when it's raining. I just loved all of those little slice of life details, and I really wanted to incorporate that into Bao as well. So it was really important for us to get all of the cooking details right in the short. And, you know, get all the details of this mom character's household, like all the tchotchkes that you see on the TV, the Chinese calendar that you see hanging in the dining room, the rice cooker in the background. We just loved just like nerding out and just filling this world with those little details.
Domi Shi is the writer and director of Bao. Domi, congratulations, good luck, and thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was awesome talking to you.
And that's our show for today. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. You'll find us at The Frame. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Horn. We're back here tomorrow.
Podcasting is supported by Fox Searchlight, presenting The Favorite. Now nominated for 10 Academy Awards, including director Yorgos Lanthimos, actress Olivia Colman, supporting actresses Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, original screenplay, and best picture of the year. Now playing.